This morning, we put out an announcement that we'll be buying out the remainder of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter's contracts. We want to thank Zach and Ryan for the 9 years that they've thanks for being here. Given the Minnesota Wild, they've given everything they've had on the ice and off the ice, and have had an incredible impact on this organization and in the Twin Cities.
Okay, so Elliot and I originally recorded this podcast last night, but wanted to capture an insert here for you because we have breaking news in Minnesota. And by the time you hear this, it's a couple of hours old, but wanted to get it out as soon as possible. The Minnesota Wild buying out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. This is sizable. This is a surprise. This is a bombshell. I know, Elliot, plenty of times this season we talked about how Kirill Kaprizov has changed the fortunes of this organization and this team. We didn't know the effects were going to be this profound. Now, it's not all about Kaprizov, obviously, but still, this one's a whopper for each.
It is a whopper, and credit to Michael Russo of the Athletic for breaking the story. It's a huge story. It's seismic. And Bill Guerin's going to talk today, but it sounds like, quite simply, he wanted flexibility in the expansion draft to protect Matt Dumba and Nico Sturm, and he wasn't going to get it. The other thing people have to realize about this is if either one of these two guys retired early, the cap recapture penalties on the Wild were going to be massive.
Yeah.
So this is about who has control. And now Minnesota, knowing that there could potentially have been cap issues for them or protection issues with them, say, we're taking control of this. We are taking control of this situation. And if there's going to be cap damage, it's going to be at our hand and our control as opposed to anyone else's. And so they've bought out those two players. They don't need to go on waivers because they both had no move clauses. They'll be unrestricted free agents right now. And I think Seattle looked at Minnesota and said, okay, it's going to be Dumba, or it's going to be Sturm, or it's going to be a goalie. And now it's not going to be Dumba, it's not going to be Sturm, and it's likely Seattle's pick for Minnesota is going to be either Talbot or Kokkonen, whichever one is not protected. So this is Bill Guerin, who has big brass ones, taking control of the decision-making of his organization.
It's not his money, though, Friege.
It's not his money.
It's a big decision, though.
Yes, it's a big decision. And the other thing it's going to do as well is it's also going to change the fabric of the team.
That's true.
Parise and Suter were big voices in that room. And Parise, kind of, as his role decreased, I think his voice kind of decreased to his frustration, but Suter still had a very, very big voice in that room. And now that's going to change. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the personality of that team changes now. Because they went from Koivu having a big voice to Suter, Parise, and Koivu having big voices. It didn't always mix very well. There was definitely a little bit of alpha male, who's got control of this in here? And then it kind of, and now we'll see where it goes. Is it going to be Dumba? Is it going to be someone else? So they're not only changing the mix of their roster, they're changing the mix of their personality. This is going to have a big effect on the overall group.
Want to get to what this means for the two players in a couple of moments, but really quickly, from the Minnesota Wild's point of view as well, when you look at the cap hits that the Minnesota Wild are going to have here, specifically in years 3 and 4, you might look at this and say, well, obviously, this is an organization going through a huge rebuild, but they're not, are they?
No, I don't think so. I think what it is I just don't see them really looking at them taking a step back. You know, first of all, everybody has believed that Guerin was really interested in Eichel. From the beginning, that was one of the teams that everyone said, watch Minnesota, watch Minnesota, watch Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And Guerin has always kind of said that I'm not tearing the future of my team apart for it, but I still think he's interested. You know, I mentioned in the blog last week that Christian Dvorak's name is out there. Russo has also reported that they're interested in Dvorak. So if he's interested in Eichel or he's interested in Dvorak, you know, they're not tearing it down. Mm-hmm. They're moving it around. And the other thing too is he's one of the few teams, like Suter is still a really good defenseman. This is one of the few teams that can handle it as best as they can because they have so many D. Like you look at what they've got, you know, with Dumba, with Brodin, with Soucy, with potentially
Spurgeon,
of course, with potentially Ian Cole. I wonder if they re-signed him now. He's in a position where he can do some things.
From the player's point of view here, we'll start with Ryan Suter. And, you know, the knee-jerk tweet is always, okay, that's it. Reunite him with Shea Weber, the Nashville duo in Montreal. Don't know that I see that, Elliot. Where do you see Suter ending up? Is there an obvious place here?
Well, I think a lot of people would be surprised if Suter ended up in Canada. He's an American guy. He's a Team USA guy. He's always played in the States. You know, I could always be surprised, but I'll tell you this. A lot of people think Vegas. A lot of people think Colorado. I've had a few people think Washington, that those would be the kinds of places that he could potentially end up. I had one guy who said, you know, don't forget he played for Barry Trotz. Is there any chance both of these guys, because everybody thinks Parise is going to the Islanders, is there any chance both of these guys end up on the Islanders? The people I know who know Suter say they'd be very surprised if he ended up in Canada.
But Parise can draw an A to B to the Island. And the latest story out of the Island is, of course, that they're trying to move Nick Leddy as well.
Well, I think because he's probably going to have to be exposed for the expansion draft. And you don't want to lose him for nothing, right?
Yep.
So if you're worried about that possibility, then you try to make the trade in advance. But those trades are really hard to make right now because who's going to be able to trade for Nick Leddy and be able to protect him?
Absolutely.
So you have to look at that list. Like this whole thing about Fleury and Leonard, and we talk about it later in the podcast, Vegas is exempt for the expansion draft. So can you see any reason why a team would trade for one of those two guys before the expansion draft? Not unless they don't have to worry about exposing another goalie.
Quick final thought here before I move along. I want to do a couple more pieces here in this insert before the rest of the podcast. Bill Guerin, you talked about him off the top, and he continues to impress, I think, a lot of people. These are bold decisions made by Bill Guerin. This one is a whopper as he redoes this team. In the brief, and listen, by like Jim Rutherford standards or Lou Lamoriello standards, it's brief. During his brief career as a general manager, what have you been able to glean about Bill Guerin?
Well, it's just that he's very confident in himself and he's not afraid to make difficult decisions. I don't know how many GMs would do this. And you mentioned, you know what, you talked about it's the owner's money. I don't know how many owners would do this.
We're talking about this on Hockey Central today, me and Stewie. I'm like, because Doug McLean used to always talk about this, you know, going to Mr. McConnell and explaining why they have to essentially throw this money away now. And he's like, well, this isn't, I understand this isn't my money. This is your money, but this is what we need to do for the team. I just wonder how that conversation between Guerin and Leopold goes when you even broach the subject of we need to buy these two out.
Well, also don't forget that Craig Leopold was the guy who really, he put $200 million into getting these two in the first place.
That's right.
He was really invested. You know, someone said to me today, there should have been a compliance buyout. Well, the owners didn't want compliance buyouts this time because they didn't want money outside the system. Mm-hmm. They were taking such a hit in the pandemic with the losses that they're like, no money outside the systems. So, I mean, Leopold deserves credit for this. He's eating a lot of cash. It's going to be interesting to see, like, they get the big break this year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the crush kind of comes in. How are they going to handle all of that? I mean, the other thing too is, you know, with Eichel, how can you bring that salary in now and know that it's going to be tight the next couple of years? I mean, that's why Dvorak potentially makes a lot of sense for me here.
Yeah.
More than maybe Eichel does for Minnesota. But I don't think there'd be a lot of owners who would do this do this right now. As a matter of fact, the question I get, a question a lot of GMs get most of the time is when their teams don't do well is, how come we're paying all this money and getting no results? I mean, for an owner to say, now we're going to go outside the system, there aren't too many doing that right now.
That's big. One quick note, inside the system, Montreal Canadiens, no surprise, Dom Ducharme, 3-year deal.
No, I don't think that that's any surprise at all. I think we all felt that was getting done. I think the one thing Montreal might be up to is seeing if they can avoid losing Jake Allen for nothing. I think that's going to be hard, though, to trade goaltenders right now, especially because most teams already have one guy they're protecting. But I think Montreal might see if that's possible at all. But Ducharme, no surprise. He deserves it. He earns it.
Speaking of goaltenders, we'll end on this and get to the regularly scheduled podcast. Pekka Rinne, number 35, calls it a career in Nashville. Vezina Trophy in 2018, 369 wins, 60 shutouts. For an 8th-round pick, Elliot, your thoughts on Pekka Rinne?
The one thing I really respect about Rinne is people just say he's a fantastic person. And you like to see people make it who are not only great players, but great people. And I don't know if anyone saw the video today that the Predators put out or the Players Tribune piece that he wrote, but that really came across. And there was something very interesting in what he wrote about how even though he was a late pick, that he had a feeling when he met with the Predators that his career meant something to them. Like, they left him with an impression that even though I'm not a guy who was drafted highly, my development matters to this team. And I think a successful, and I use the term employee, because I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast understand that, relate to that a lot better than player. Mm-hmm. I think an employee is going to be more successful if they buy into what the organization is selling, or they feel that the organization buys into what they're doing. And it's very clear that from the moment that Pekka Rinne met with the Predators after he was drafted, he felt they believed in him. And that created a situation where he did whatever he could not to let them down. He was very loyal to them. And that's the story that really stuck with me. It's that right from the moment he was drafted, they made him feel that way. I think that is so important. But he had a great career. He's going to have his number retired there. And, you know, just everybody who ever spoke about him just talked about what a tremendously decent and impressive person he is.
You know who was really good for him, Elliot? Barry Trotz. And I'll tell you why. I remember having a conversation with someone. This is when Peter Laviolette took over in Nashville. And as you'll recall, Pekka Rinne originally struggled when Laviolette took over. And I was talking to someone in the press. I'm like, what gives? He looks like such a different goaltender. And he said, Barry Trotz was great for Pekka Rinne because Rinne liked having a lot of shots to get into the game. And Barry Trotz's entire system is allowing a lot of shots, but from safe areas. We see this through his entire career. And he said that was great for a guy like Pekka Rinne. And then Laviolette came in and it was all about shot suppression and the rise of Matthias Ekholm, and we're limiting the number of shots on goal. And he said he didn't get a feel for the game. Barry Trotz lets Pekka Rinne get a feel for the game, and it really helped him. So whenever I think of Pekka Rinne, I always think, yeah, you know what? There's part of the genius there is Barry Trotz letting this guy get a feel for the game. And man, to your point, a real fun goaltender to watch.
You know, that reminds me of a funny story. I remember Ron Wilson once. I can't remember which goalie it was, but when Wilson was coaching the Leafs, some goalie was coming back from an absence.
Yeah.
And some report, I can't remember who it was, said, do you hope that you give up a couple of good chances early on so that the goalie gets back in and feel the game? And Wilson just blew up at the question. He's like, that's the stupidest question ever. Like, I want my team to break down early and give up breakaways right away. It's just so funny. Like, to me, that is just the funniest thing, because you have a coach here who says, okay, my goalie likes that. Well, maybe we'll let a couple go. And you have another guy here saying, that's the dumbest question ever. It's so funny. It's just, life is so funny.
You know what, though, when you're Barry Trotz and you have Pekka Rinne in net, you can say, yeah, you know what? Let this guy have a few. He's that good. And he was. Congratulations. Wonderful career for Pekka Rinne. We now return you to your regularly scheduled podcast. He's won Stanley Cups, Elliot Friedman. He's won Conn Smythe trophies. He's won Norris trophies. He's one of the most decorated. Oh, we should mention Olympic gold medals as well. He's one of the most decorated defensemen in the NHL. His name is Duncan Keith, and he is now officially a member of the Edmonton Oilers. That saga coming to an end. Caleb Jones and a third-round draft pick goes to the Chicago Blackhawks. Where do you want to start with this one? From the Edmonton point of view or from the Chicago point of view? Your choice.
So we're taping at 9 Eastern time on Monday night, and Ken Holland just finished his media availability. Did you watch or listen to any of it?
I caught about like the last, I'd say, quarter of it.
It was tense.
It was tough. It was confrontational.
I think it's a lost art. The ability to argue generally is a lost art. You know, you and I don't argue too much, but...
Yes, we do. What are you talking about?
Not like that.
Yes, we do. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's so lame.
Thank you.
Me and Amal, we argue all the time, and it gets pretty heated. Yeah. But at the end of it, we just sort it out and we move on. And I think that's generally a lost art. I saw some pretty challenging exchanges between Holland and some of the media, but I don't think that's a big deal. I think that's kind of the way it should be. Ask questions. If they're tough, somebody can give you a pointed answer and everybody moves on, and we'll see what next year determines. You know, the thing about this is I believe that one of the things that Ken Holland was doing over the past couple of weeks was asking some of his top players about Duncan Keith.
He did it as presser mentioned a few times that he went around the league to gather opinion.
No. I'm not worried about around the league. Like what other people say, I don't care about. I think he asked like his top guys, mm-hmm. What do you think about Duncan Keith? And, you know, I know last year his numbers weren't very good, but I think a number of those players talked about that Chicago-Edmonton series in the bubble and how difficult defensively they found Duncan Keith to deal with. And I think that's one of the reasons the Oilers did this deal. And I heard that today, and I double-checked that in a couple of places, and I got confirmation on it that I think some of the input that the current Oilers gave about the way Keith played in that series in the bubble is one of the reasons Edmonton decided to make this deal.
Do you think that's enough, though, to justify a trade such as this, where there's no salary retention and they give up Caleb Jones? That's the one that I always come back to. Like, I understand, wow, he was hard to play against. I don't know that.
I think it's more than just hard to play against. Because hard to play against sometimes in hockey lingo, Jeff, comes down to he put his stick through my nose. Mm-hmm. I think it was more than that. I think it was that they found it really difficult to play offense against him. That this was still a guy who knew how to play defense and at least made it challenging to deal with him when he was on the ice. And it's different than hard to play against. I think they still respected his ability as a defensive player. I think that's a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm with you and probably everyone else. I was stunned that Chicago didn't have to either eat some of the cap hit or take, say, Koskinen back to buy him out. I don't think James Neal was ever a legitimate factor to buy him out because that's a 4-year buyout. Yeah. And I don't think the Blackhawks were ever interested in that. You know, it came down to, even though he's a 5.5 cap hit, his cash is 3.6 the next 2 years. And I think that's where Chicago held the line. They said, we are going to take a run here at Jones and or Hamilton, and we are not hurting ourselves in our ability to do that. Now, the Caleb Jones thing, you know, I understand how everybody feels about Jones as a player. And I do think Jones last year, he needed to get out of Edmonton after last season. After the way last year went for him and what Edmonton has coming, Caleb Jones needed a new start. I don't think he wanted to be back. And I think the Oilers understood that he wasn't going to be back. And to be honest, I think they thought there was a chance they were going to lose him anyway. So they made the deal with Jones in it.
Let me circle back to one thing here. And that's a comment by Ken Holland when he talked about salary retention and the most you can retain is 50%. And if the Chicago Blackhawks did that, the return would have been much more significant. Do you think that's Carney for we didn't want to give up Ryan McLeod?
This is what I think it is. Like, one of the things that Holland decided here is that, look, in theory, he could have simply said no, 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 and waited to see if Chicago. Now, this is me talking. I'm not saying that I know this. Mm-hmm. And I haven't spoken to Ken Holland about this, but this is kind of what I'm thinking is going around in Ken Holland's head. He's got a lot of variables. He's looking at two goaltenders because they're considering buying out Koskinen. We thought Larson's deal, like, I'm surprised about this Larson thing, because back after the trade deadline when he wasn't dealt, the word was this deal was very close to getting done, and everybody involved seemed that it was going to get done. And now there's doubt. So there's an extra roster spot he has to figure out. Caleb Jones, I think they were worried they're going to lose him anyway. Whether he's going to be taken in the expansion draft or whether he was going to get dealt, I think we all kind of figured Caleb Jones wasn't coming back to Edmonton. Yes, Ken Holland could have waited and could have tried to slow play Bowman a bit more, but he's also looking at, okay, are we making a pitch for a Hyman or a Yoel Armia? So he's got a lot of balls in the air. And he pulls his players. He gets back favorable reviews on Keith. He knows he's less cash underneath the cap. Yes, the cap hit is bigger than everyone would like. Yes, he probably should grind Chicago for a better deal. I think we all agree with that. But I'm thinking, and again, this is me putting myself in his head, which might not always work, but I think he's thinking, I may not get this deal done by the expansion draft, and I may not get this deal done by the start of free agency. I want the certainty of this block. I have two spots of uncertainty in goal. I have a spot of uncertainty if I can't get Larson done. I have some spots of uncertainty up front I'd like to improve. I've got enough variables. I'm comfortable enough with what we're doing here that I don't want this to be a variable anymore. That's what I think happened here. If I'm doing a guess of what occurred, that's what I think happened here. And now they can, you know, do we give Mike Smith 1 year or two in goal? Do we go out and we get one of Vegas's goalies? Or do we target Georgiev from the Rangers? Or, you know, somebody else? What are we going to do now? Is it Hyman? Is it Armia? Is it another forward? It's one less thing for the Oilers to have to worry about here. And I do wonder if that was a factor. Keith wants to be there. Your players give him a positive review. You think he's going to be better behind Nurse as opposed to the number one guy. And you have something in place where a lot of other places you have question marks. That's the way I see it.
One of the things that I wonder about here, Elliot, is how much of a market was there for Duncan Keith, or how much of this was driven by Duncan Keith, that this was Duncan Keith wanting to go to play with Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers, and this was Chicago's way of accommodating someone who, as I mentioned off the top, won Stanley Cups, Norris Trophies, one of, if not the greatest Blackhawks defenseman of all time. This was their way of saying, thanks for doing all that well under market value.
I think a couple of things. Number one, I think Keith initially started the process by asking to be close to his son. Like, he explained how little he saw his son during the media conference.
Last year was pretty difficult not being able to see him. I went almost 3 months without seeing him, and then had a quick little visit, and then, you know, another close to 2 months without seeing him. So I know that the border restrictions and those type of things might be a little bit different this year, but I was still at a point where, you know, he's 8 years old now. He's got his things going on. And so I just thought that as time went on in the off season, I realized I didn't want to, knew I didn't want to go those long periods of time without seeing him. So, you know, I'm excited to be closer to him and be able to see him more frequently and have him more involved and being able to come down to Edmonton.
I think anybody who's any kind of parent would understand what he was talking about there, him wanting to be closer. I also think Chicago was willing to do it because, one, they had an expansion protection issue, and two, they want to go after either Jones or Hamilton. So both of those things were a factor here. There's five teams that I think were potentially in consideration. I don't think Winnipeg, for geographical reasons, I don't think Winnipeg was ever in it. I don't think that Vancouver was ever in it. I think if Calgary did anything, it was very cursory. I think it was Edmonton, and for a time it was Seattle, but then it became purely Edmonton, and they haggled for a couple of weeks and they made the deal. This is where we ended up. I think the other thing is he's not going to play first line minutes or first pair minutes. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a second pair guy for them.
So one of the things that that is interesting here is because whispers about players, and like we are getting tweets about like this is like Larry Robinson going to the LA Kings. This is like Doug Harvey at the end of the career going to the St. Louis Blues. This is Leach is a Leaf. Things like this generally get whispered. Right, there's this conversation that doesn't make it to the public stratosphere, but this one is very public. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about Duncan Keith, the player. There's no answer to this, and it's not even a question as much as it's a comment. There's no real answer to this other than I wonder what happens inside Duncan Keith's mind reading all of this and hearing all of this. Like, this has been very public. The criticism has been very public. There's nothing new that's been added to the conversation today other than...
Do you think he sees the criticism?
Yes, I do. And I want... Because I firmly believe that players... even if you don't read it yourself, you hear about it. It's impossible. It's impossible to avoid it.
I got to tell you, I don't know if I believe that.
Okay.
I don't believe it's impossible to avoid it. I don't believe that at all. But I believe some people block it out better than others.
I have a hard time believing that players at that level don't know the story going on around them.
You know, Keith, he might. I don't know. He was always like, he always seemed to me like a guy who kind of kept things at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
If he was a guy who was worried about what people thought, it was probably the people who affected his playing time or his role. He could be kind of growly with media and surly on the ice. I don't know. Maybe he does. But all I can say is this. If you took me away basically from my son for almost a year, and then you put me back in a position where I could see him a lot more often, I would be wired at the opportunity to play.
That's what I'm getting to. There's that issue, but also the very public criticism of him. Like if you tell a future Hall of Famer mm-hmm. very publicly and create an entire story, rightly or wrongly, that he's lost a lot of the juice on his fastball, that he's lost, this guy used to fire it up around, you know, 98 miles an hour. Now he's struggling to get to 85. I always wonder what happens to a pro athlete when he hears that, even if it's at the end of the career. Like, to your point, you put him in a better environment. I'm not saying that Duncan Keith is going to have this magical bounce back season next year with the Edmonton Oilers. I just don't know how it can't affect you. Like, it must, like, if you're Duncan Keith.
Everybody's different, right? Like I find that I'm reading comments less than ever. Like, I think all of these debates that we have about hockey, they're the same. They're the same debates. Nobody's opinion is changing. Like, I've said this on this podcast, the whole analytics versus eye test debate, it's tired to me.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't recognize that there's room for both, I'm not really interested. I just think all of these arguments that we have, they're tired. They're the same arguments we've been having for 5 or 6 years.
Listen, the one thing about social media that we've learned is everything gets out in the open and a lot of the conversations are repetitive. Look at news. Nobody actually argues about issues anymore. It's the same thing in sports. What do we all argue about? Sources. Where did you get that from? Where did you get that from? And then you criticize the source itself. You never actually talk about the event or the person or the thing. All you do is argue about where the perspective comes from. And I think sports is the same as news right now. That's all that we're doing.
Look, Keith, if they were bringing him in to be a first line defenseman, I would say, boy, that's setting up for failure. But I'm very curious to see what he's going to be like on the second pair, who his partner's going to be, you know, all of that stuff. I'm really curious about it.
I think that's a great way to open up the podcast. And welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by the GMC Sierra AT4. I love it. We're on vacation yet.
It's been a long season.
Okay, we'll try to present some more sparkling conversation here, even though all of it reaches the same common denominator, according to Elliot Friedman.
It's been a long season, everybody.
I get it. We can all see the finish line. We're all close to the gate. When I used to work at Parkland Cemetery, old man Frank, bless him, he used to always say, "We're close to retirement. Hey, Jeffrey, I'm close to the gate. I'm close to the gate." I miss you, old man Frank. We talked about what this meant for the Edmonton Oilers. What does this mean for the Chicago Blackhawks now that Keith is out, Jones is in? You mentioned the other Jones could be at play here, Dougie Hamilton as well. Where's Chicago heading now, Friedge?
Well, they cleared some room on the blue line. Look, the Caleb Jones thing, it's transparent. Everybody sees what's going on here. I do think that Caleb Jones, right from the beginning, was in the conversation for Chicago. They wanted him, and I don't think they were the only team who thought about this. I think Philly, we'll talk about Philly. They were trying to get a Seth Jones deal done. It's on hold right now, but I also think Philly was another team thinking about the whole Jones brothers play and how this could potentially work. So anyway, look, it opens up the opportunity for them to have some cap room. They've got over $10 million in cap space. My question is, you look at their roster, do you think they can make a Seth Jones deal?
It depends if it comes with a contract extension.
Okay, so let's just say it does come with a contract extension. Do you think you can make a Seth Jones deal?
It starts with Kirby Doc.
Okay. And where does it go from there?
Then I think we're looking at Mitchells and Boakfists, and we're looking at picks.
Okay. I think it starts with Doc. There's no question about it. And if it's not Doc, it's DeBrincat.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe Columbus acts for both, but we know that's not going to happen. Anyway, are you making that deal if you're Chicago?
No.
See, that's the thing. Like, I don't see how Chicago's making that deal now.
No, because Chicago is going to transition from the Taves and Kane era to the Doc DeBrincat era. That's pretty obvious.
So if your plan is for Seth Jones, you'll probably have to wait a year.
Until he's a free agent, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's risky.
That's the way I look at it, too.
That's risky, because someone else can jump in quick and scoop him up, and that's it. That's why the Caleb Jones thing, the you know, this offseason's version of Rob Niedermeyer is so interesting. How much of a lure can that be?
Well, for Rob and Scott Niedermeyer, it was very much a lure.
Yeah.
We'll find out. But I just don't see how Chicago can make a Seth Jones deal now.
Where else is Chicago headed here then? I mean, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews both under contract for two more seasons, and then big question marks.
I do think that they're interested in adding to their goaltending. There was a comment made in The Athletic today that there's some rumblings that they're in on Marc-Andre Fleury. I think that's true. I think there's a number of teams that have reached out to Vegas and said, are you sure you're keeping both your goalies? And if not, which one could be available and what could we do here? So I think the teams have called who prefer Fleury, and I think there's other teams who've called who might prefer Leonard. And it's up to Vegas to decide what they're going to do here.
See, it's appeared all along, though, that Marc-Andre Fleury is a candidate of choice for Kelly McCrimmon and the Vegas Golden Knights. that Robin Leonard was the one they went out, they got the extended, you know, et cetera. And it seemed as if, you know, despite the fact that here's someone with a Vezina Trophy season under his belt, when they had the chance to make the switch, they did. And that's ultimately what they wanted to do all along. But Marc-Andre Fleury just went out and grabbed and kept the number one job.
And won the Vezina.
And won the Vezina.
But did not finish as their starter.
Correct.
Oh, wait a sec. Should we take a time out here? Amal wants to watch Ohtani. We're doing this as the home run derby is going on Sportsnet. You know what?
I'd like to watch Ohtani too.
Amal is mad because we're taking him out in Ohtani.
Look at that smile of Ohtani. Look at the fans and the signs. Like, this is great.
So Amal always says we don't treat him properly. We're going to give a brief interlude while we watch Ohtani.
3 minutes of hitting.
We're not actually going to do 3 minutes of dead time on the podcast. We're not doing that.
Okay, so Elliot, we paused to watch...
Tip of the cap to Soto.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, we paused to watch Ohtani. It turned out to be the Juan Soto show. Holy smokes.
Boy, when he gets the barrel out of the bat on it, he gets a mile.
He is such an intimidating hitter. The one thing that I don't like about how the home run derby was laid out this year is I don't like these two guys going head-to-head early. It's like, I want both these guys to go deep. I want Ohtani and Soto to go deep in the home run derby. I don't want them to face off against each other in the first round, but there you go.
At least we got a cliffhanger early. Now, we should finish up on Vegas.
Let's finish up on Vegas goalies here. Okay.
You know, so we talked about Leonard and Fleury, and, you know, the one thing here is the owner has always said it's his preference that Fleury remains a Golden Knight. And as far as I can tell, the last I heard, Jeff, the owner was not an immaterial voice. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where this goes here. But I do think there are a number of teams. Anyone looking for goaltending is reaching out to Vegas and saying, what are you thinking here? Is it Fleury? Is it Leonard?
Yeah.
And what's it going to take if you decide to do it?
You still have strong feelings about Vegas and Jack Eichel, by the way, perhaps with Eichel playing the role of Nikita Kucherov and on LTIR all season long to suddenly appear in the playoffs.
I don't know about that. You're saying that, not me. I just think they're around it.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, and I give Buffalo some credit on this. Buffalo has been pretty good lately at keeping secrets. They didn't make it easy to figure out who was part of their coaching search, and they're not making it easy to figure out what they're doing here with Eichel. But I think there's a lot of teams around it. What I can say is this. One, they're not letting just anyone see Eichel's medicals. Like, you really have to be legit in it, and they have to be convinced that you're legit closer to making a deal before they'll let you see his medicals. And the second thing is...
So hang on, just about pausing. You need to present a significant offer before you can have a peek under the hood at all.
Yes.
This isn't just, hey, we're interested, but let's have a look at the medicals. This is, we're interested and this is what we're offering. Now, can we see what's happening with the player?
Yes. And like, for example, I think it's a little bit different with St. Louis and Tarasenko. Mm-hmm. I think St. Louis and Tarasenko are really motivated to make this deal. And St. Louis is basically saying, look, if you're serious, but it's not to Buffalo's degree, but St. Louis is letting people, and Tarasenko is given permission for that, from what I understand. And also, I've just heard, like, the price on Eichel is high, still high. It's not, maybe not as high as it was before, but it's still very high. And it's young. Like, it's your best prospects and picks.
As you would expect.
As you would expect.
That should come as a surprise to nobody. Okay. This was an interesting one to wake up to on Monday morning.
Yeah.
An early morning press release. Pierre Maguire, ex of the NHL and NBC, now senior VP of player development for the Ottawa Senators. Pierre is someone who has interviewed for general manager positions before. It's, you know, never been a secret that he's wanted to get back into working with an organization in some capacity. But did this one catch you off guard?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you have any idea?
Oh, God, no. I had no idea. It really surprised me. It did. Like, you know, I woke up, I slept in a bit today. You know, I set my alarm for 8 o'clock. I blew right through it. And when I woke up and I looked at my phone, I had a lot of text messages there. And I was thinking, what did I sleep through this morning? And it was that. And it was a surprise, I think, also because it combines a couple of things. It combines broadcasting and hockey gossip, right? So that's a big deal. I didn't see that coming at all. I think there's a lot of people wondering what this means for Pierre Dorion. I would tend to believe it means, look, Pierre Dorion has another year left on his contract, and I believe they're talking about an extension. If the extension gets done, then we all move on here. If the extension doesn't get done, then I think we're all wondering where this is going next year.
Can we pause on that for 1 second? Is the extension in question one for the role of general manager or something higher?
No, I understand it's the general manager job.
Okay.
So if it gets done, nobody's looking twice. If it doesn't get done, then I think we're all looking at it and saying, okay, what does this mean?
Because when it happened, like your phone, my phone went as well. And a lot of the, you know, one of the common denominators in all the comments was, or questions were, did Ottawa just hire their next general manager?
Yeah, I think a lot of us were wondering that too. But again, I think this comes down to what happens with Dorion. And I will say this. I think the worst thing the Senators need right now, the worst thing is instability. Their organization has had a lot of internal change. A lot of people inside the organization have left. When Melnick was on Bob McCowan's podcast and ripped the deal that the car dealership got with the local government, you know, he trashed that. And then some of the sponsors who worked very hard to put that deal together, from what I heard, they said they would pull their sponsorship of the Senators. Like, it's never smooth there. And now you've got a team. You know, Jack Capuano wasn't allowed to interview for Buffalo, and I think that's made everybody there, including the head coach, wonder what that means, and he's also got another year left. You've got all these good young players. There's reason for hope in what you're trying to build there. The last thing they need now is instability. The last thing.
Did they also, in some ways, considering how much of a profile Pierre had on television, both in the United States and in Canada as well, did they hire a sort of new face for the franchise? Now, Pierre Dorion is still going to be the manager, as you point out.
Mm-hmm.
But here's someone that's never been shy about a microphone or a camera. I look at this one and I wonder, is this is this a new face and part of a new charm offensive in Ottawa with a team now that, you know, based on how they finished up last season, might just have some expectations attached to them, albeit in a very difficult division with, you know, the two Stanley Cup finalists and the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers and the Maple Leafs and right now, as much as they're, you know, as much as they're picking up, you know, and developing assets, you know, there's also expectation that comes along with it. Is this now perhaps a public face to massage expectations? I'm just wondering if there's more to the title of Senji Elliott than just Senior VP of Player Development.
Well, I think titles are stupid. I don't pay any attention to titles. I look at it and say, what's your role? Like, what are you actually doing? The one thing I want to say about Pierre Maguire is, this is someone who has lusted after this kind of a spot for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to pour his heart into it. You know, here's the thing. I know that some of the things he says on TV and everyone drives people crazy. I look at it like there's a lot of people, and Jeff, we know people like this. The way they are on TV or in media is not the way they're in real life. Like, I don't think the way he broadcasts games is the way he's going to approach his job. I think he's going to take it very seriously. I think he's going to say, this is the opportunity I have dreamt of and wanted for a long time. And so I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I give myself the best chance to be successful at this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to be highly motivated to show that he can be a very competent NHL executive.
that dovetails this conversation, which is, and we had this when Brian Burke left Sportsnet for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep.
And that is, like, when you've grown up in an environment based on competition, it's tough to turn that tap off. No matter how many games you do for NBC, how many junior tournaments you do for TSN, how many Stanley Cup finals you do for NBC, like, it's tough to turn the juices off. Because as we've talked about before, and we talked about this openly with Brian, for a lot of these people, it sucks leaving the studio not caring who won a hockey game. Do you believe that that's true of Pierre Maguire as well?
I don't know if I've ever thought about it that way. I think I thought about it the way I just mentioned, that he wants to prove he can do this. Like, do you know anybody else in media who's wanted this opportunity more? Like, I'm not even sure I would say that Burke has wanted this opportunity.
No,
more.
I thought Brian was checked out, like, done, finished. I'm never going back, burn the bridge. Don't send a life raft. Like, that's what I thought of Brian. And then an opportunity presented itself. But, like, as I mentioned off the top, like, he's interviewed for countless manager jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Countless, right? And was the finalist for numerous of them.
But that's my point. I think now he gets his opportunity.
But that's my point, too. It's like he has that natural desire for competition. And when you grew up in that environment, even though you've done media for however many years, I don't know that you ever lose that. And I think if you do lose it, you don't go. Like, I think people that take these jobs, they're attracted to competition. They crave competition. More so than analysis and understanding, they want competition.
Okay, I disagree with you. I think it is for this, and I don't know Pierre as well as some other broadcasters do. I would say for Pierre, it's the competition is him versus the people who think he can't do it. It's not the competition of the games. It's him versus the people who think he can't do this. Like, he said things on the air before about analytics. He got the analytics question today.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why I think that Pierre Maguire is going to embrace analytics on a level. Because you can't do this job now if you don't. So he's going to have to find a way to get into it.
He walks onto a team here now with the Ottawa Senators, who, as I mentioned a moment ago, have some expectation. This isn't a heavy weight of expectation around the ankles of the Ottawa Senators that is trying to drag them down. But this is also not, you know, the Ottawa Senators that have stripped this thing down to the bolts and are building it up again. Like, they have, now mind you, two of the three are restricted free agents and need contracts, but they have a first line and they have a lot of prospects. And they have a lot of players that were expecting to take the next step in their career, Tim Stützle, right this way. What is Pierre Maguire walking into initially here with the Ottawa Senators? What do you think, Freach?
They are on the rise. We talked about this last week. Their fans are thinking playoffs next year, and they should be thinking playoffs next year. Like, this is what we just talked about the last few minutes ago. Like, if I'm the Ottawa Senators and I want to win the summer, I'm not having any crazy turnover. I'm extending my general manager and I'm extending my head coach. You don't want them coming out of the gate next year and at their first two-game losing streak, are there going to be changes? Is Pierre Maguire taking over? Is Jack Capuano the new head coach? Settle this. And if I was DJ Smith, and I have a feeling the way that Maguire talks, he's a DJ Smith guy. But if I'm DJ Smith, I might just say, if I don't have an extension by the start of the season, don't talk to me and bet on myself.
Are things settled in Philadelphia right now?
I got to tell one story. So I was looking for Voracek for days.
Hang on. You're searching for Voracek.
Well, you know, searching for Bobby Fischer. I was searching for Voracek because I hear this rumor about what's going on there. And
is this a Seattle rumor?
No, it's that they've talked about whether or not it's time for him to move on, right? And people are telling me, be careful how you write this because it's not like he's asked for a trade and it's not like the Flyers are saying you're out of here. It's basically, look, because of money, we might have to do this. We're going to leave you unprotected and we're going to see. But it might not work and you might have to be back next year. So it's really delicate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people stress to me, as I wrote in the blog, they stress to me that this is not acrimonious. But I was trying to find Voracek because I just remember that Zoom call last year. And, you know, if you write this wrong, I know the first time he does a Zoom call, he's going to come on and go, "That Friedman, you write such blah, 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 blah." And I'm thinking to myself, I better try to find him. And here's the thing. So he doesn't have a registered agent anymore. And he doesn't follow me. He's on Twitter, but he doesn't follow me, so I can't DM him. I have an email for him.
Hang on. Is this your way of publicly, is this like a public smoke signal for Voracek to get in touch with you?
No. That's lame. I wouldn't do that. That is so lame. I can't believe you think I would be that lame. Someone sent me an email, an old email for him. It didn't work. And nobody would give me his number. Like, they're saying, "We're not giving you his phone number." But I knew I had the story and I was worried it was going to get out. So mm-hmm. I wrote it. And then 2 days later, someone slid me this number and said, "Try this." And he declined to comment. He just said, "No comment," is what he said. And I totally understand that. But I eventually did find him. But he just, you know, he didn't want to say anything, which is fine.
What do you think happens here? Not just with Voracek, but with the Philadelphia Flyers. We keep coming back to the Flyers. We're waiting for the Flyers because it's just so... historically, it's been very Philadelphia Flyer to be involved in everything and make something big happen.
I think that they're still trying. Like, they were in big on Jones, and I think they were working on something with Columbus, and they really tried, and Jones was not ready to give them a commitment yet.
Moving along.
Yes.
Is Andrew Kopp the most interesting man in the NHL right now?
He's one of them. I think this is going to be a really fascinating week for Winnipeg and Kopp. You know, I think if he was signed long-term, he'd be protected, no question. Now I think they're weighing it in terms of, if you protect him and you don't know if you can sign him, then you lose Appleton probably. And Appleton was a really good player for them.
He was, yeah.
Last year. I really wonder if Winnipeg is going to make a decision. If they don't have Kopp signed by the time that you have to freeze your roster, I'm very curious to see if they're going to move him. He's 1 year from UFA. He's arbitration eligible. He's too good to risk losing for nothing. And you don't want to lose another player for nothing.
Right.
In a failed attempt to keep him long term.
His name was out there in the Alexiak conversations too.
I hadn't heard that, but you heard that.
I had heard that, and that was a name that kept popping up.
I have one regret about the blog last week. I forgot to write about Columbus. And I didn't want to write a lot about Columbus because they were going through a lot, and I didn't want to write anything that, you know, about any decisions they might be making. Why add stress onto what was a horrible week for them? But I just wanted to say, like, when I heard that Brad Larsen jumped in his car and drove to Detroit to be with Manny Legacy and everybody involved after it happened. And, you know, I just saw the way that Davidson and Kekalainen handled it. There's no playbook for how to deal with things like this. We credited their fans for the tribute they did on last Monday's podcast. And Amel did a great job leaving 80 seconds of quiet after we did it. But I just thought the Columbus organization did extremely well. And now this week they're working on a memorial for Kiv Lennox, and I guess they're going to stream it for people who aren't going to be in there. But there's no playbook for this, but I think they've handled it unbelievably well.
Elliot, well said. Agreed. Back with some of your comments in moments. Okay, let's wrap this up with some hashtag Ask31s. This from Zoom. Anything Devils can be formulated into any question that will suit the podcast. Elliot, do you have anything about the New Jersey Devils?
Well, New Jersey is one of the teams I wondered if they would be interested in either of the Vegas goalies. mm-hmm. Just to give potentially Blackwood a veteran to split time with next year, somebody who could play a lot of games. So that was one of the things I kind of wondered. I do believe that they were potentially offering the number four pick around for a really good young defenseman
mm-hmm.
That had some team control. And I do think that was potentially out there. So those were the two kinds of things I was hearing about with the Devils. I think they want to try and take a jump next year if they can.
And in that spirit, from Joe, #ask31, literally anything on Detroit, please. We had a couple just talk about Detroit tweets come at us today, Elliot. Anything with the Wings?
Well, I think one of the problems with Detroit is that if anything gets out of there that Yzerman doesn't want, I think all the employees are worried he's going to stuff them into a freezer until one of them admits they were the source. I think Detroit's been around the Hyman situation. You know, with Hyman, I just believe that barring a stunning change in philosophies here, that the Maple Leafs and Hyman's camp are just very far apart. I think Detroit's one of the teams that's shown interest. I think Edmonton's another. I think there's probably more, but I think Hyman is a player who's on their radar. You know, I talked about Bertuzzi in Toronto. That was definitely something Toronto considered at the trade deadline last year. As a matter of fact, I think he was somebody they were really interested in, but his injury changed that. And I don't know where that stands right now. I think one of the things about the Red Wings is they have a lot of cap room. They have a lot of flexibility and they're unafraid to use it. And I think some teams who can't deal with Seattle, because Seattle's not going to deal with everybody.
Yeah.
Seattle wants to maintain financial flexibility. They're not taking six guys with big long-term deals that teams want to get rid of. So I think Detroit's another team that's going to be kind of in and around that. And I do expect the Red Wings are going to try to take advantage.
So you could see the Detroit Red Wings then as third parties facilitating a trade.
Or taking someone themselves if the price is worthwhile.
Here's a non-hockey question, or maybe it is a hockey question. From Luke Hawking, what books will you guys read or plan to this summer?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. I've got a couple, actually, right now I'm looking at. So I don't like to read a lot of sports in the summer, but I've got three sports books that I'm looking at. Number one is I'm rereading a book called The Breaks of the Game, which is one of the best sports books ever written. It's about the Portland Trailblazers in 1980. David Halberstam, who was a great author, spent a season with them, and his insights into the team are incredible. And it's amazing how much that happened 40 years ago is still very similar to what's going on now with athletes and team dynamics. The second book I have that I will be reading after that is a new book I just got. It's called Seeing Serena. And I'm really fascinated by Serena Williams. I remember the first time I ever was in a media room interviewing her. I just, like, some people, they have it, whatever it is. The command she had over the room. I just remembered the gaze that she laid on you when you asked her a question. It was intimidating, I remember. Plus, also, she's one of the greatest athletes ever. Now, the Wall Street Journal gave it kind of a bad review, so I was disappointed to see that, but I'm still going to read it. And the other book I'm reading, I just got it, and I'm going to read it, is called The Frying Pan of Spain.
Mm.
It's Sevilla versus Real Betis, Spain's hottest soccer rivalry or something like that. I'm going to get all the soccer fans that are going to clobber me here. Spain's hottest football rivalry.
There you go.
Yes.
Don't step in it.
I got it recommended to me. I just got it. So those are the three books I'm going to get to first this summer. What are you reading?
I wonder, you know what? I got to finally get around to reading. Well, there's two. One is the true story of Andre the Giant by Bertrand Hébert and Pat LaPrade. Very much looking forward to finally cracking the spine in that one. Been meaning to for a while. And the other one that I've already picked up, and I love it. I love books like this. And it's a book about one of, if not maybe my favorite movie of all time. It's called Mad as Hell, written by David Itzkoff. It's about the making of the movie Network.
Oh, wow.
With the great Paddy Chayefsky screenplay. Honestly, Fried, you would, I mean, first of all.
I do love stuff like that. And I have to find some non-sports books this
summer.
Dude,
when I'm done, I'll flip it your way or just go pick it up yourself. It's called Mad as Hell by David Itzkoff. And it's all about the making of this movie. And I've seen this movie about, God, I don't know, 50, 60 times.
Great movie.
Maybe my favorite movie of all time. And I'm blown away every single page. I love Paddy Chayefsky to begin with. And that screenplay was a Picasso. And I love it. So I'm going to probably finish that one before I get to the Andre the Giant story. But those are my two coming up.
Those are good books.
Looking forward to those.
Okay, so before we wrap this up and you introduce our musical guest, this week's musical guest, I just wanted to describe the podcast. So initially, I thought this was going to be my last week of work because I was doing the Olympics this year. Unfortunately, I'm not doing the Olympics this year. Disappointing, but you know what can you do? I understand that I have hockey responsibilities and that takes priority. So we're going to do 2 more weeks worth of podcasts. So at least 2 a week. And, you know, we'll probably do one after the expansion draft. We'll probably do one after the draft and the last one will probably be the day after free agency or two. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of what we're looking at, 2 more weeks of podcasts.
Yep. That's our schedule. And then we will all 3 of us will turn into rumors. You will not hear us. You will not see us. You will not find us. Finding Friedman. Start its own Twitter feed. Taking us out, a collaboration we never knew we needed, but we do. Jack Stedman of Bombay Bicycle Club takes his solo Mr. Jukes project and links up with South London rapper Barney Artis for The Locket. The album drops August the 6th. From that record, here's Mr. Jukes and Barney Artis with Vibrate on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Yeah. I was looking for gold until my man got stolen. Bars are swollen, here comes the omen. Seeing how they move, industry politics, be careful what you do. They've been keeping what they stealing from the truth. Every time you move, they want you to lose. Ain't a game player, just a game slayer. My prayer's always been clear, I'm keeping some in the air. Moving like some stick up kids, the mission's sick. Magicians, how they flip those tricks. Disappear in a flash with all the cash money, little Wayne going bad. This is a handbook for the damn crooks. Go find what man took, the time is now, look. If you wanna fish for the prize, keep your eyes on the hook. Yeah. Let it vibrate. We let it vibrate. Even if I wait, will it ever get filled? This is feeling fate, does it ever get real? We let it vibrate. Let it vibrate. Even if it's fate, will it ever get sealed? Even if it breaks, will it ever get healed?